This is Live and Local. It's your local performance connection. On today's program, we will be featuring a 17-year-old singer-songwriter from Urbana named Emily Otness. She is one of several singer-songwriters, most of them young, maybe all of them young, I don't know quite all of them, who are going to be performing at the Canopy Club in Urbana tonight, along with a Chicago headliner called Little Boy Junior. And that show starts at 8 o'clock tonight, and Emily will be playing with us for us live in our studio coming up in a little bit. But first, we'll be having a segment about a new play being presented at the McLean County Museum of History in Bloomington in partnership with Illinois Voices Theater. It's called The Affray, Lincoln's Last Murder Case, written by Bob Bray and Jared Brown. It opens tonight and runs through Sunday. And I'll be talking with Jared Brown in just a couple of minutes. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was called The Hard Times Waltz by Stephen Foster, played on instruments from the 19th century by the Chestnut Brass Company. My guest on this portion of Live and Local is Jared Brown, who is Professor Emeritus of Theater Arts at Illinois Wesleyan University, former actor, director of many plays, written 6 books, a bunch of plays, including one that you can go see and hear this weekend, Friday through Sunday, at the McLean County Museum of History. It's called The Affray, Lincoln's Last Murder Case. And Jared Brown has co-written this with Bob Bray. Jared is on the phone with me right now. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm glad to be here.
So tell me a little bit about some of the other things you've done before we get into this one. 6 books, you had told me, on what sorts of topics?
Yeah, well, I've written 4 biographies of people in theater. Alfred Blunt and Lynn Fontanne were famous American actors of the 20s through the 60s. I've written a biography of Alan J. Pakula, who was a film director who directed All the President's Men, Sophie's Choice, and other fine movies. His name is not very well known, but his movies certainly are.
No, I know the name. Is he still around, though?
No, he died in a car accident a few years ago. Another book about Moss Hart, a playwright of the 30s through the 60s, also a fine director, who directed the original versions of My Fair Lady and Camelot, and a biography of Zero Mostel.
And Moss Hart is the heart of Rodgers and Hart.
No. He's the heart of Kaufman and Hart.
Oh, that's Lauren's heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Also, I've written a novel, and would you believe? Well, I almost said that I couldn't remember the other book that I've written, but it's a history of the theater during the Revolution in America. It was published by Cambridge University Press.
That sounds like something that would have been interesting to research. We don't think of theater in the revolutionary America. We just think of the revolution most of the time.
Well, that's right. Most histories of American theater, in fact, would have you believe that the theater came to an end with the revolution. There had been a colonial theater, but the theater came to an end during the revolution and then picked up again after the revolution. I found that there were many performances during the revolution, although most of them consisted of British officers who performed when they were occupying American cities.
Are any of those ever done anymore?
Any of the plays?
Yeah.
Well, they did some of the plays of Shakespeare, so those plays are certainly done. The performances would have been essentially amateur, but they prompted a lot of performances by American officers who wanted to show that they were in no way inferior to the British on the battlefield or in the theater, for that matter. And there were even a couple of professional theaters who kept operating during the Revolution, although they lost a lot of customers, because theater technically was illegally during that period. The Constitutional Congress had said that Americans shouldn't waste their money on such frills as theater when there was a war going on.
Yes, when there were more important things to do, right?
Supposedly.
Yeah, that's always supposedly, I think. And so you did a lot of acting before you started to teach at ISU, or did you teach elsewhere before this?
Well, I started as a professional actor when I was 10 years old. My father had been a professional actor, and he worked out of Hollywood. And so I began doing broadcasts on radio and then on television, starting from the time I was 10 until I was in my 20s. Then gradually I decided to give that up. I preferred writing and directing, and so I went into teaching, which would provide me with a salary and something I enjoyed doing very much as well, and also gave me the opportunity to direct essentially any plays that I wanted to.
Yeah, that's the nice thing if when you have sort of a captive audience and a captive bunch of actors.
Right.
So who are the actors involved in this production, The Affray, Lincoln's Last Murder Case?
Yeah, they're all local actors. Kate Rosicki plays our narrator, whose name is Elizabeth. And Abraham Lincoln is played by John Bowen. We have a number of other actors in the play, eight others, and I'd be glad to give you their names if you want them. Jeff S. Reedy, Dave Crostal, John Fisher, Nick McBurney, Kevin Woodard, David Flanders, Jim Curran, and Todd Weinbrenner.
So this is done in partnership with Illinois Voices Theater. Are they all sort of technically members of that theater company, or does this...
Well, they're being paid by Illinois Voices Theater. Illinois Voices Theater is the producer in collaboration with the McLean County Museum of History. And, by the way, Illinois Voices Theater is run by Judy Brown.
Any relation?
Yes, she is. She's my wife.
I thought that could have been the case.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually gotten ahead of myself. What was the genesis for, or the inspiration for, this particular play?
Well, The Affray, Lincoln's Last Murder Case, The Affray actually was a murder trial that occurred in 1859. And for a long time, the transcript was lost and, in fact, thought not to exist. But it was discovered not too long ago, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, although in fragmentary form. For instance, we don't have the closing speeches to the jury by the defense or the prosecution. And so Bob Ray and I, who wrote the play together, we followed history as closely as we could, and then when we couldn't follow history because there was no historical record, then we fictionalized things a bit, but we think we've stayed close to what history probably was at the time.
So you did what you've done, what time-honored playwrights and movie makers and novelists, historical novelists, have done. If you don't know the facts, make something up.
Well, that's about right. I should mention that Bob Ray is an expert on this period. He's done a lot of research about Lincoln. He's written about Lincoln. He's written a biography about Peter Cartwright, who is one of the main characters in our play. And so, you know, Bob always would keep me strictly on the right track historically.
So the subtitle of this play, The Affray, Lincoln's Last Murder Case, implies, of course, that there were other murder cases.
Yeah.
I guess when we all know that Lincoln was a lawyer, but I'm not sure I've ever had much of a sense of what kind of lawyering he did.
Well, yeah, I think that's probably the least that most people know about Lincoln. He did defend people in various kinds of trials, including murder cases. But this was the last one. It occurred in 1859, and he was nominated for the presidency in 1860. And, of course, as we know, he won that race. And his career as a lawyer came to an end at that point.
So he was the defense attorney in this case?
Yes, he was.
Mm-hmm. Was he always the defense attorney in other cases?
I don't know that I could answer that question with accuracy. I believe that you're correct, that he was primarily a lawyer for the defense, but I'm not sure that that's so.
And what makes this particular story suitable for dramatization, do you think?
Well, first of all, there was a writer who discovered the transcript after it was released, and he made a fictional novel out of it. He used some historical facts, and he fictionalized a great deal. And he sent it to the Museum of History. He wanted to come up to Bloomington, where he had lived at one time, and promote his book and speak about the book and sell copies. And the manager of the museum, Greg Coos, contacted my wife, Judy, and said that he thought a dramatization would be more in order. So Judy spoke to me about dramatizing it. I felt that we needed a historian involved, and so Bob Bray became my collaborator. And the two of us, I think, have worked pretty well together.
So this is kind of a dramatization of a novel, in a
way.
No,
I should say that the novel was separate, although it did begin the process. We wouldn't have known about this, or at least I wouldn't have known about this, unless I had been sent a copy of the novel and read it. The novel tends to be very romantic, and I was taking a different approach in the play that I worked on. So I think that the novel is quite different from the play, but certainly the novel's existence had a good deal to do with the play.
So I'm guessing yours is a little more hard-edged courtroom drama.
Well, yes, that's what we've been aiming for. And we're trying to demystify Abraham Lincoln. He is, hopefully at least, not the somewhat forbidding character of history, but a human being with a great interest in not only the law, but his client and the people that he's working with.
So I note that the play is going to be presented in a courtroom, in fact, at the museum, the Governor Pfeiffer courtroom. I'm afraid I've not been to the museum myself. How does a courtroom end up in a museum?
Well, this was originally a working courthouse. It was open for business from 1903 until 1976. It was the primary courtroom of the McLean County Circuit. And at that time, another courthouse was built. The Center of Justice moved elsewhere in Bloomington, but the Historical Society now operates this building that the courtroom is in. So the courtroom is still in existence, and it seemed to be, you know, the perfect setting for our play, although the original trial occurred in Springfield. But the courtroom certainly offers, you know, the jury box and the judge's box and the witness box and so on. So it seems to be the ideal setting for our play, and it's proved to be. It's a wonderful opportunity to be able to produce a play in these circumstances.
Well, it certainly makes the set cheap in that case.
That's true, too, yes.
Is there any evidence by some bit of fortuitousness that Lincoln ever was in that courtroom?
I don't think so. He was primarily active in Springfield. So I would doubt that he presented a case in this courtroom, but it's certainly possible. I wish Bob Bray were here on an extension line and could answer the question, because I know that he could answer it better than I.
Yeah. Well, there are three performances of this, am I correct? Friday night,
you're right.
Saturday night, and then Sunday afternoon.
Saturday night, July 16th, and then on the afternoon of July 17th. And what I have to tell you, which will be, I'm afraid, a disappointment for you and maybe for your listeners, is that all the tickets are already sold out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I can give you a phone number for people to call if they'd like to get on a waiting list or see if any tickets have been turned in. But at the moment, we have no tickets.
Well, then, by all means, let's have the phone number.
Phone number, which is for the Education Department at the Museum of History, is area code 309-827-0428.
309-827-0428. So at least if folks can't get in to see it, they know that it's going on. And it was a revelation to me that that this was happening, and it sounds like a fascinating story and should be a fun play. And I'm also glad to know about you. And
I should mention to you, by the way, that this play may be revived. We may be doing it again in the future. We don't have any dates set. We don't even know if this is going to happen. But if it does, I'll be sure to let you know, and you can pass that on to your listeners, and they may want to come to see it.
Sure. Well, I mean, anytime you sell out a play at all suggests that, maybe people want to see it, and we ought to do it again sometime.
Yeah.
Jared Brown, Professor Emeritus of Theater Arts at Illinois Wesleyan University and co-author with Bob Bray of The Affray, Lincoln's Last Murder Case, being presented this weekend, Friday through Saturday, at the McLean County Museum of History in Bloomington. Thank you very much for joining us on Live and Local.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me, Kevin. I appreciate it.
You heard the solo flute of Paula Robeson in a performance of Stephen Foster's My Old Kentucky Home, mixed in with, well, no, I guess it's My Old Kentucky Home, Good Night. And heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. We have support for today's show from the Music Shop, celebrating 50 years of service to music education, providing for musicians of all ages in over 200 school music programs. They also feature guitars, amplifiers, digital pianos, and sound equipment in the Pro Sound Center at 27 East Market View Drive, Market View Plaza, Champaign, or at themusicshop.com. And shop is spelled S-H-O-P-P-E. Tonight at 8 o'clock at the Canopy Club in Urbana on the University of Illinois campus, Little Boy Jr. comes down from Chicago, and he will have quite a number of special guests with him. Among them, Nioga Blacksmith, Black Girls, Iron Tigers, Pamela Makala, Megan Johns, Morgan Orion, and our guest on the rest of today's show, live in our studio, is Emily Otness. She's actually a 17-year-old singer-songwriter from Urbana. And as she says, she's, quote, been creating music as long as she can remember. And I got to know Emily as a flute player in the East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra. So it was actually somewhat accidental in my thinking that I ended up that previous segment with a solo flute piece. I wasn't really thinking in those terms, but it seems kind of appropriate. And Emily has also brought on a friend and fellow musician, Margaret Camp Blair. So thanks to both of you for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
So what does this really mean, Emily, when you say you've been creating music as long as you can remember? How long can you remember?
Well, the longest I can remember is when I was like a toddler and I would sing myself to sleep, write songs like lullabies for myself. My mom always makes fun of me for that. So
do you actually remember doing that, or does your mom tell you that you did that?
I actually remember that the reason I stopped singing for a number of years is because I was embarrassed that she caught me singing myself to sleep one time, and also when I was in the church choir, I forgot the words completely. That's another reason. I didn't start singing until, I'd say, junior year of high school, really.
Restart singing,
yeah.
Wow, so you were really in... I've heard of people who will stop being musicians because their parents intimidated them, or because their parents didn't want them to pursue music or something like that. But I don't think I've ever heard of anybody who intimidated herself.
Yeah, then I just decided that I would give it a go. I played in Endless Pages. We were actually on your show.
You were on the show.
And at that point, I had been singing backup only, but I still was writing a lot of the songs, so I was creating music but I decided to focus on singing too.
What's the name of your colleague who was with you in Endless Pages?
Tessa Turner.
Yeah, you guys sounded fantastic.
Thanks.
I remember very well when you were here, and I remember that Mike Pritchard, who's our sound guy, came out. I told you this at the time. He came out before we actually did the show, because of course he always has to do a sound check and listen in, and he'll sometimes come out and say, you better look out, maybe they're not so hot. Or, as in your case, he came out and said, these girls are really good. So I remember
the same about us.
Well, today, you know, yeah. You were on somebody else's radio program recently, because somebody told me that you were, and I said, how does she sound? He said, oh, she was great. So, yeah, your reputation is getting around.
I hope so. I've been on the radio. This is my third time this month, so I'm enjoying it a lot, but I'm also very tired, so I'm looking forward to a nice vacation in August where I book a lot of things for myself. Like, I have 3 consecutive shows in 2 weeks, I think. One at Cranert, one at Memphis on Main, and then the next is at the IMC, all just 3 days in a row.
And at the Cranert Center, what's that? Is that their Uncorked program?
Mm-hmm. With Endless Pages.
Next week?
Yes.
Oh, so Endless Pages does exist somewhat.
Somewhat. Yes.
Now and then. So that'll be next Thursday. We'll be sure to mention that during the week at the Cranert Center. That'll be a 5 o'clock gig.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the third one?
The third one was at the IMC, and that's with An Evening with Your Mother and Bad Columbus. They're 2 local bands.
And IMC is the Independent Media Center in Urbana. And that's which day?
The 30th.
Okay, we'll have to make sure to get that on there as well. And An Evening with Your Mother, that's a group we haven't had in here yet.
Oh, they're very good. You should have them.
Yeah, I've heard. Actually, I did hear them a little bit. And I'm told that they're probably the most frequent guest over at the IMC somehow or another.
I think it's because they might know the owner or something, so they definitely get a lot of shows out there, which is nice because it's a great venue. So.
Well, and you got to promote yourself, which you're finding out, and you seem to be doing pretty good at your own marketing.
It's a lot of work, but Margaret has definitely helped me.
We did posters one day. We...
Well, you're over 18, or you're 18, so...
I am 18, so that's been easier to get more people aware of our show at Canopy, which does require guests to be over 18 or with a parent.
Or 18.
Yes. so we've been talking to a lot of my friends who are not minors and seeing if we can get word out through me to people who are actually able to come.
Because I suppose it would be really uncool to bring your parents to the show.
That's what our response has been from Emily's friends, who most of them are under 18, has been, I would come, but I really don't want to bring my parents.
And
but
I say,
they might
why
enjoy
not?
It.
They will, yeah. I think that our music is, well, we're first at the Canopy, so it's not too late for, you know, some parents may not want to be out at 1 a.m. listening to a band. And I think we're not very hardcore. We're
not
pleasant
really.
To listen to, I'd like to believe so.
Well, since you're talking about it, why don't we have a sample?
All right.
And we'll judge for ourselves.
Okay. This song is called Deja Vu, and it's just going to be me singing on this one. In the past, you told me you would love me, but you're never thinking of me now, so I don't know what to say. And I confess that honestly you said to me that you would give me everything, but now you gave it all away. Am I alone in this, or does another goodbye kiss seem redundant at all to you? Didn't it just rain, or does it always feel this way when you go away? You're my deja vu. Every time I needed something from you, you were never there to love me, so now I'm standing all alone. But honey, I'm so dreadfully attached to you that any time you made me blue is gone when you come home. Am I alone in this, or does another goodbye kiss seem redundant at all to you? Didn't it just rain, or does it always feel this way? When you go away, you're my deja vu. Oh, and how many times have you said goodbye? How many times will you leave me to cry? Oh, why? And how many times will you walk out the door saying that you won't be seeing me anymore? What'd you do that for? Am I alone in this, or does another goodbye kiss seem redundant at all to you? Didn't it just rain, or does it always feel this way when you go away? Or please don't go away, my, please don't go away, my deja.
Song written and performed by Emily Otness here in our studio, live on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. I often have said on here that I don't engage with lyrics very much, but you had that one line, especially it keeps popping out already. Am I alone in this? See, I'm testing to see if I can remember it all. Am I alone in this, or does another goodbye kiss seem redundant at all to you? Did
mm-hmm.
I get that right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just about a first, I'll have you know.
To remember the lyrics, you mean?
To actually latch on to something and be able to remember it, and I just thought it was a wonderful turn of phrase.
Thank you. My teacher, my history teacher, I was in the talent show at UHS, and he was one of the judges, and he said, that's the first time I've ever heard the word redundant used in a chorus, so I thought that was funny.
are you good at English?
I'd like
and
to
history?
Think so. Oh, well.
Because you said that was your history
I'm not
teacher.
Naturally good at history, but I'm good at writing.
You're good at writing, yeah. Well, I mean, it seems like it, just from what I remember from your songs with Endless Pages before. And
thank you.
And from that one now, we'll be hearing a few more as we go along here. I know that you've been having not exactly a crisis, but maybe the crisis is more for other people, because certainly in my case, as somebody who's worked with you in the East Central Atlanta Youth Orchestra, I know you as a really fine flute player, and you apparently have others who are saying, oh, you should be playing flute, you're so good, but you're finding that you really want to do this.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, I've actually found a way to do both in the way that I like to. I'm making an EP album that's going to come out as late as the end of August. So I've been trying to find a way to put flute in a lot of those songs, and I have the flute in either half or more. So it's been really fun because I write my own part, but it also is a way for me to keep playing, and it's really fun.
I know we're going to find out later, because in fact maybe we'll do this next. You brought along one of the songs that I presume is going to be on that EP?
Mm-hmm. It is. It's going to be in the middle because it's a nice instrumental. It's the only instrumental piece that we have on the CD.
And have you written yourself virtuosic flute parts?
It's a funny story. The day we were in the studio,
we had planned to have it just be piano and cello. Emily had sent me the recording of the piano part and said, do you think you can write yourself a cello part? So I sat down in a room by myself for about 4 hours.
Turned out awesome.
And then we were in the studio, and we'd done the takes for the cello that we needed. And Emily went, you know, I've got my flute in the car. Do you guys mind if we just spend a couple minutes with me just fooling around with this? So she ran out, got a flute, brought it back in, and started playing. And it fit, and it sounded amazing. So then, of course, we had to do a couple takes of that.
I think it really made the song more than I could ever have imagined, because I knew that the instrumentation would be very nice because it's flute, cello, and piano. Like, how could that not be beautiful? But I wrote the part in 10 minutes or less because I heard it in my head, and it filled out the chords really nicely. So
you had written the piano part,
mm-hmm.
and then Margaret wrote the cello part.
Yes.
And then you just filled in the blanks with the flute.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. It's almost like it was meant to be there all along. I just never thought about it.
Well, through the wonders of recording technology, we can have Emily playing flute and playing piano at the same time, mm-hmm. along with Margaret Camp Blair on the cello. And what is the tune called?
It's called Waltz.
Well, now that's an original one.
Yeah. It's actually...
At least call it Emily's Waltz or Margaret's Waltz or something like that.
I'm glad I chose the name that I did, because I want the listener to interpret it more than I could give. It doesn't have words, because I want the melody to be the most important part of it.
All right, Emily Otness, Margaret Camp Blair, and Emily Otness in this performance
here. A trio of two.
A trio yeah. of two, right, on Live and Local. Thank you. That was a tune simply called Waltz by Emily Otness. Actually, really was co-written with Margaret Camp Blair. Emily and Margaret are both with us here live on Live and Local, although that was pre-recorded because, well, that was recorded because Emily was playing both flute and piano in it, and Margaret the cellist. And that's going to be out on an EP that will be appearing sometime in August, they hope.
I'm really excited for that.
EP typically has, what, 3, 4, 5 songs, maybe?
This one's going to have 6 because we figured since waltz is like an instrumental break in between, going to have 5 with vocals. So.
And are you therefore looking soon to... they don't really call them LPs, do they? But if you're going to have an EP, you might as well have an LP, long playing. So a CD, full CD at some point?
Definitely at some point. I'm not sure if I can do it as soon as I'd like to because Jared Kimball, the guy I record with, he's actually going to move to Italy for 2 years at the end of August. So we're kind of
cramming.
We're cramming and pressing to finish the EP as soon as we can so I can sell it before Pygmalion Music Festival or just around that time, try to get it out there. So
Emily is going to be with Margaret. You're playing at the Canopy tonight?
Yes, I am.
Canopy Club in Urbana. There's a whole bunch of people going to be performing, and I notice as I'm looking at my events calendar that I'll be reading later that some of them have been promoting themselves because I have here that you're at 8 o'clock and then Neoga Blacksmith is at 8:45 when, in fact, the whole show starts at 8, I guess,
with
a whole string of people. So you are the first people on it.
Yeah. It's really nice to be able to perform at the Canopy Club. I'm really excited because I never thought that I would get into such a well-known venue. But at the same time, since I'm under 18, I've really had to try to promote myself to the point where it's like, I don't know if I'm annoying or if it's productive, but I think that we've got a good crowd coming in and we've definitely worked really hard. So, yeah, it's going to be exciting.
So, is it difficult for somebody who's under 18 to perform at the Canopy Club?
No, I think that you just have to contact the right people and see what happens from there. I think it's all about the music. That's what they're looking for.
I've heard somewhere, and I don't know if this is actually true or not, that you have to have at least one person in your group over 18.
They let me do it before they knew that you were going to.
Apparently not.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah.
They didn't even have to have your mom sign off on it or something?
Nope, but she's coming.
As long as you don't drink on stage, right? Or anywhere else in the premises.
Yeah. That'd be really classy.
Sarcasm.
Hey, bands do it all the time.
Fluently.
Yeah, bands do it all the time. The show features, I guess, as kind of the headliner, Little Boy Jr., who's coming down from Chicago. And I like this. He says here, Little Boy Jr., born in 2008, brother of Big Girl Sr. And then goes on to say some things I probably shouldn't say. But along with other folks, along with Emily, or following Emily, Morgan Orion, who is somebody you know?
I do. I've met him various times at some of my shows, actually. Like at the Red Herring one time, he was performing there. So
he's also a singer-songwriter?
Mm-hmm.
And guitar, piano? What does he do?
Guitar. And he sometimes performs with Annie Volokhi, who was in the ECIYO. She was a backing vocalist.
And ECIYO was East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra, Annie Bassoonist. In fact, she was just here the other day for the Urbana Park District production of
Anything Goes.
Yeah,
I was going to try out for that, but...
You've got a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
And then Megan Johns, who is she still in or out of college by now?
I don't know.
Singer-songwriter, usually with guitar. Her mom, a longtime music teacher around here. Pamela Makala has been on this show once. She's a singer-songwriter, and she is also a pianist. And she comes from a highly musical family. Her mom is a piano teacher. Dad was the horn professor at the University of Illinois, and her brother, a really fine violinist. And then these other three I don't know anything about. Do you know the Iron Tigers?
No.
A group called Black Girls?
No. I've only actually heard Morgan Orion out of all of these people, so.
I think the same applies to me as well.
And then Neoga Blacksmith, who apparently bill themselves as rockabilly, folk, and country.
Wow.
That's what it says on my other calendar here.
Okay.
So all those folks are going to be at the Canopy tonight. This show, the doors open at 7 o'clock. The show starts at 8. And we do know that Emily is first. So if you get there right away and all you want to hear is Emily and Margaret, then... you can go home, but there's so many other people there. I'm sure you'll find plenty that you can enjoy as well. Let's hear another song.
Okay. What I really like about playing shows and writing songs is that I don't usually stick to one genre of music. So the last song that you heard was more classical, and the first song was more jazz. This one is more folk, so...
I was actually going to ask you, before you go on, the beginning of that waltz immediately reminded me of a number of pieces by Erik Satie. Is he somebody whose music you've heard?
I don't think so.
Oh, I'll have to play. Go listen to some of his pieces sometime, some of his most famous pieces. And you'll hear some of that in there. I was just curious if you were under the influence or if it was purely coincidental.
I think I started that song off of two chords, and then I just played around.
Probably the first two chords.
The first two chords.
Yeah. Check out these pieces by Satie called Gymnopédies.
All right.
Yeah, and you'll know what I'm talking about.
All right. This one's called Marianne, and it's more of a folk song. So.
Song Marianne or My Marianne?
Marianne.
Marianne. And who is Marianne?
Well, this is, I think Marianne's a beautiful name, so I just wrote a chorus with the name in it, and I wrote a story around that chorus. So it's sort of like, it's not related to me, but I'm telling a story with music.
And it was a starling you were talking about at the beginning?
Oh, no, it's
I mentioned that this morning.
That was the other thing.
The
was the other thing.
His darling.
It's so
as
hard
in sweetheart.
To not say his darling. Like,
yeah, well, it didn't make any sense to me. But then I thought, well, no, some of the other things you're talking about.
Yeah, that's what Margaret said. She thought it was starling for the longest time, but it's darling. So I'll try to say the D more.
So that's one of your challenges. There's a book I saw once over at, I don't know if it was Borders or Barnes & Noble, and I wish I could remember the name of the book because I'd love to go get it again, but it was had all of the lines of songs that people always get wrong.
This would be one of them, and it's my own song.
And it's just because, you know, because lyrics can be complicated and because a lot of people don't have great diction. You do, so this is why I thought, maybe she really is singing about a starling.
Well, I'll...
But then I thought it was a starling named Marianne, and then, it doesn't seem like a starling anymore.
It's a darling.
It is a darling. Well, that was Emily Otness in the lead vocals and guitar, and Margaret Camp Blair in the harmony vocals. And sounding wonderful here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. You can hear them at the Canopy Club tonight, along with some other young singer-songwriters. Nobody quite as young as you all, or as... Morgan Orion.
He's older than I am. He's older. 19 or 20, maybe even 21.
Oh, positively ancient.
Yeah. So the youngest
virtually
star
decrepit.
First.
The youngest star. Maybe. Is that the reason or that's just coincidence?
I think it's just the way it worked out.
I actually had a show booked for the 16th at the Canopy, and it was going to be Morgan Orion opening for me. Around the same time, I'm not really sure, but then another
scheduling
band
didn't work out right.
And so we got moved to this show, which I'm actually kind of happy about because this is our first show at a venue where...
they don't know us. They haven't really heard us. This is a good way to introduce ourselves.
Especially since there's already going to be a crowd at least waiting for the next act. They can hear our music too. Hopefully they'll be interested.
Well, see, that's great marketing right there. That's why so many bands... lead for big name acts.
Exactly.
You know, and then they become the next big name.
I think that a show by myself at this point at that venue wouldn't be the smartest choice because as hard as it is to get a crowd that's older than I am already, I would be the only act besides Morgan Orion. So this is going to be a great opportunity.
Yeah, it's terrific. Our broadcast today on Live and Local is made possible with support from these business partners: Swire's Land and Management Company of Danville, EAG Company Incorporated of Fairmount, Colonial Pantry Champaign, and United Council Staff Union of Illinois, Springfield. These business partners join the friends of WYLL in making great programs possible, and we thank you very much for your support. Emily, I wanted to go back to that question I started to explore earlier and the expectation that others seem to have that, you're a wonderful flute player, so you continue that. Is that really difficult for you, or is that more difficult for other people? And then what have you been doing to enhance your skills as a non-flute player?
Do you mean is it difficult for other people to deal with the fact that I'm not playing flute as much?
Well, I know that it's difficult for other people to deal with it because you told me that it is. I'm disappointing a lot of people.
I think that I am, but it's something that I can do at the same time. I want to explore this aspect of my music more because really I've just started my solo career and it's actually been taking off faster than I ever thought would happen. I never thought I would have so many shows in 1 month or that I would be playing at Pygmalion Music Festival. That's a dream come true.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm really excited for that. Since all of this has been going on at once, I'm sure there's going to be more, and I'm going to be really busy this year.
Are you finding it at all difficult?
The fact that I'm not playing as much?
Well, no, I don't mean. I mean, just are you finding it difficult to make the choice?
I did at first, but then I thought, I know what I want to do, so I'm just going to.
So
do
you
what
you've figured
do.
It out.
I figured it out.
Which not everybody's able to do.
Yeah, and I definitely have found a way to incorporate flute into my music. I didn't want to at first, actually, because I wanted to separate the two. I wanted to take my identity away from a flutist and more into a songwriter, but I thought, why do I have to do that when I can just do them both?
That's a good question.
It's actually my mom's idea to play flute.
You had time to make the distinction, and now you know that you can do without flute, but now you can introduce it back again.
I still take lessons every week, and I play... a little less than I used to, but enough to keep my sound as best as I can.
But you've also started to take piano lessons?
Well, I was going to, but I don't think that we have the funding because then I started voice lessons instead.
That was going to be my next question, if you were also doing that.
Yeah, I'm taking voice from Janet Robb, who is a wonderful voice teacher. She's taught me a lot about how to expand my range. And
and is she able to deal with you as a, for lack of a better term, sort of pop voice? Or is she trying to, you know, give you classical techniques? Or
we're exploring all different types of genres because I sort of have a lot of genres in my own music. I wouldn't want to be limited in a style. So she says that some of the tricks that I do with my voice, she wants them to be optional for me. So she doesn't want me to have a break or a crack, you know, between the head voice and the chest voice. She wants me to have one voice so that I can have more
range,
more options, and therefore I could sing classical or jazz. We're working on jazz now, so.
Well, I know, and I asked you, it's been quite a while. I see it's been, last May, when I asked you to send me a little bio of yourself, and as somebody who's pretty young, it's suitably short. Well, what you said here was you're working to refine your own style, which is, quote, a mix of jazz, folk, ragtime, and pop. And the curiosity to me there was the ragtime bit.
I won't actually be playing the ragtime-iest song today. I don't know how to say that.
But you do have some ragtime-y songs.
Yeah, my favorite memory of that song, it's called Your Eyes, if you're interested, but I played it at a Thanksgiving dinner fundraiser at my school, and there were two people dressed up in turkey suits and many different types of people eating because it's free, and a lot of people that, like, minority students that have come from other countries. They go there because that's where they would eat Thanksgiving dinner. It's a really great program.
Because their family's at
home. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's a lot of elderly people, too. This woman, she started dancing to my song with the turkey.
She danced with the turkey.
Yeah, it was so funny. And it was a really great feeling because we were the entertainment, so making people have fun.
So you didn't change the song to the turkey trot or something like that?
No.
That's been taken, actually. That's been taken. Well,
darn
we have
it.
Time for one more. Yeah, darn it, it's right. It's good. Good name. We have time for one more from you.
All right, I'll head over to the piano then.
Going over to the piano. Emily Otten is here. And Margaret, we should ask just briefly. We've been putting all the focus here on Emily. But,
well, it's her gig.
It is her gig, but you're here with her.
Oh, we forgot to mention the drummer. You should talk about that.
Yeah.
Eddie Waldmeier. I've only gotten to meet him a couple times. He's going to be our drummer for the show tonight. He's very talented. He can take, if Emily has an idea in her head of what she wants the percussion to sound like, she can give a little bit of an idea to him. And then he can just pick it up and take off and go. And he plays bass also. He'll be playing bass guitar with us on one of the songs.
So is he high school, post-high school?
He is.
I think he's
significantly
post-college.
Older than us.
Post-college?
I don't have
Maybe.
An exact age. I would guess 24, 25.
So you are attracting other talent at your young age here.
We actually met him through Jared Kimball, who records for me. So there is a free recording program in Champaign-Urbana called Stallion Studios, but I didn't choose them at first because I didn't know about them. And I chose Jared Kimball because he gives a discount, and of course we're helping each other
sure.
with each other's businesses. I wouldn't trade paying a lot of money for free because he's introduced me to so many new people and different ideas, and he's actually helped me arrange or given me ideas for finishing some of the songs that I never thought that I would finish. So
it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So what's the song we're going to hear?
This one's called Alive.
Emily Otness, live on Live and Local. And Margaret, are you joining for this one?
I am.
Margaret Camp Blair.
I've got some questions I can never answer. I just don't have the time, so they always go ignored. But I want to prove to myself what I can be. I'm tired of being what the world already knows me for. But anytime I lose my faith, I forget how to communicate. And everyone is always waiting on my is finding what they really want to do in their lives. But for some reason, it's been twice as hard for me. I have so many parts of me I want to redefine. But anytime I doubt myself, I doubt anything that I ever felt, and I lose all the confidence I used to own. And all those words I want to say, they never get the chance to escape, so I never feel like speaking up at all. And tell me what I need to find. If I don't feel, if I don't feel alive. And tell me, am I real or am I living a lie? If I don't feel, if I don't feel alive. Tell me what I need. What I need to find. If tell me what I feel, need. If I don't feel alive. And tell me, am I real or am I living a lie? If I don't feel, if I don't feel alive. If I don't feel alive. If I don't feel alive.
Emily Otness and Margaret Camp Blair on Live and Local, a song by Emily, which actually sounds like it could have answered my question, the last question I asked.
I was just thinking about that when I sang it.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have you. Sound fantastic, both of you, and I hope folks will go out to hear Emily, Margaret, and all the other folks are going to be at the Canopy Club tonight in Urbana starting at 8 o'clock, along with Morgan Orion, Megan Johns, Pamela Machala, the Iron Tigers, Black Girls, Nioga Blacksmith, and Little Boy Jr. coming down from Chicago. The doors open at 7. The show starts at 8. And for information on Canopy Club shows, you can go to canopyclub.com. And you've heard Emily and Margaret here live on Live and Local. Here are some of the other events you can go see and hear live in our area. There's a whole lot. I'm going to see how many I can get through. Arsenic and Old Lace is in Danville, put on by the Lincoln Park Theater Company at Lincoln Park Performing Arts Center tonight and tomorrow at 8 with a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. At the Iron Post in Urbana, this evening at 5 o'clock, it's the Jeff Helkeson Quintet featuring Chip McNeil, and then at 8 o'clock, the Joel Spencer Quartet. The Mike Fenoglio Duo will be at the Bouvon Wine Bar in Urbana tonight at 6 o'clock. Michelle Jolly, or Jolie, don't know how she says her name, sorry, blues, folk, rock, jazz at Memphis on Main in downtown Champaign. That's this evening at 6 o'clock. The Prairie Dogs play bluegrass at the Pink House in Ogden this evening at 5 o'clock. There's a multifaceted choral concert for free at Grace Lutheran Church tonight in Champaign. This afternoon at Champaign, just an hour from now at 2 o'clock. I hope I have that time on here, right? Rachel Rombach and Ryan King, again, sorry, not sure I know how to pronounce her last name, play at the Alamo in Springfield this evening at 5:30. Also in Springfield, a Hipbone Sam Band are at the Blue Grouch Pub. That's at 8 o'clock. And Angel Brown, pianist at J.P. Kelly's Pub in Springfield, also that's at 8:30 tonight. Ken Smith and Tom Painter are at the Bouvon Wine Bar tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock in Urbana. Jambone with Sally Weisenberg are at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. Frank Wildhorn's The Civil War in Concert, one-time event at St. Peter's United Church of Christ in Champaign tomorrow evening at 7:30. It's Old Sledge at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow night at 9:30. At the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, it's Romeo and Juliet at Ewing Manor in Bloomington. That's tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock. And Candy Foster and Shades of Blue are at Alto Vineyards in Champaign tomorrow night at 7:30. And that is what we have time for. You're listening to 90.9 WYNL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and more for Central Illinois. We have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wine tastings on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Saturday, it's a tasting of French wines and other finds, followed by live music from 7 to 9 by, as we mentioned earlier, Ken Smith and Tom Painter. Details at thecorkscrew.com.